Chapter 88. What happened at Itaihu, less than 48 hours after leaving Nuku'iwa, the blue, looming island of St. Christina, greeted us from afar. Drawing near the shore, the grim, black spars and waspish hull of a small man-of-war craft crept into view, the masts and yards lined distinctly against the sky. She was riding to her anchor in the bay, and proved to be a French corvette. This pleased our captain exceedingly, and, coming on deck, he examined her from the mizzen rigging with his glass. His original intention was not to let go an anchor, but, counting upon the assistance of the corvette in case of any difficulty, he now changed his mind, and anchored alongside of her. As soon as a boat could be lowered, he then went off to pay his respects to the commander, and, moreover, as we supposed, to concert measures for the apprehension of the runaways. Returning in the course of 20 minutes, he brought along with him 2 officers in undress and whiskers, and 3 or 4 drunken obstreperous old chiefs, one with his legs thrust into the armholes of a scarlet vest, another with a pair of spurs on his heels, and a third in a cocked hat and feather. In addition to these articles, they merely wore the ordinary costume of their race, a slip of native cloth about the loins. Indecorous as their behavior was, these worthies turned out to be a deputation from the reverend the clergy of the island, and the object of their visit was to put our ship under a rigorous abu, to prevent the disorderly scenes and facilities for desertion which would ensue, were the natives, men and women, allowed to come off to us freely. There was little ceremony about the matter. The priests went aside for a moment, laid their shaven old crowns together, and went over a little mummery. Whereupon, their leader tore a long strip from his girdle of white tappa, and handed it to one of the French officers, who, after explaining what was to be done, gave it to German. The mate at once went out to the end of the flying jib boom, and fastened there the mystic symbol of the ban. This put to flight a party of girls who had been observed swimming toward us. Tossing their arms about, and splashing the water like porpoises, with loud cries of taboo. Taboo, they turned about and made for the shore. The night of our arrival, the mate and the Maori were to stand watch and watch, relieving each other every 4 hours. The crew, as is sometimes customary, when lying at an anchor, being allowed to remain all night below. A distrust of the men, however, was, in the present instance, the principal reason for this proceeding. Indeed, it was all but certain that some kind of attempt would be made at desertion, and therefore, when German's first watch came on at 8 bells midnight, by which time all was quiet, he mounted to the deck with a flask of spirits in one hand, and the other in readiness, to assail the first countenance that showed itself above the forecastle scuttle. Thus prepared, he doubtless meant to stay awake, but for all that, he before long fell asleep, and slept with such hearty goodwill too, that the men who left us that night might have been waked up by his snoring. Certain it was, the mate snored most strangely, and no wonder, with that crooked bugle of his. When he came to himself it was just dawn, but quite light enough, to show 2 boats gone from the side. In an instant he knew what had happened. Dragging the Maori out of an old sail where he was napping, he ordered him to clear away another boat, and then darted into the cabin, to tell the captain the news. Springing on deck again, he drove down into the forecastle for a couple of oarsmen, but hardly got there before there was a cry, and a loud splash heard over the side. It was the Maori and the boat into which he had just leaped to get ready for lowering rolling over and over in the water. The boat having at nightfall been hoisted up to its place over the starboard quarter, someone had so cut the tackles which held it there, that a moderate strain would at once part them. Bembo's weight had answered the purpose, showing that the deserters must have ascertained his specific gravity to a fiber of hemp. There was another boat remaining, but it was as well to examine it, before attempting to lower. And it was well they did, for there was a hole in the bottom large enough, to drop a barrel through, as he had been scuttled most ruthlessly. German was frantic. dashing his hat upon deck, he was about to plunge overboard and swim to the corvette for a cutter when Captain Guy made his appearance and begged him to stay where he was. By this time the officer of the deck aboard the Frenchman had noticed our movements and hailed to know what had happened. Guy informed him through his trumpet, and men to go in pursuit were instantly promised. There was a whistling of a boatswain's pipe, an order or two, and then a large cutter pulled out from the man of war's stern, and in half a dozen strokes was alongside. The mate leaped into her, and they pulled rapidly ashore. Another cutter, carrying an armed crew, soon followed. In an hour's time the first returned, towing the two whale boats, which had been found turned up like tortoises on the beach. Noon came, and nothing more was heard from the deserters. Meanwhile, Dr. Long Ghost and myself lounged about, cultivating an acquaintance, and gazing upon the shore scenery. The bay was as calm as death, the sun high and hot, and occasionally a still gliding canoe stole out from behind the headlands, and shot across the water. And all the morning long our sick men limped about the deck, casting wistful glances inland, where the palm trees waved, and beckoned them into their reviving shades. Poor invalid rascals! How conducive to the restoration of their shattered health would have been those delicious groves! But hard-hearted German assured them, with an oath, that foot of theirs should never touch the beach. Toward sunset a crowd was seen coming down to the water. In advance of all were the fugitives, bareheaded, their frocks and trousers hanging in tatters, every face covered with blood and dust, and their arms pinioned behind them with green thongs. Following them up was a shouting rabble of islanders, pricking them with the points of their long spears, the party from the corvette menacing them in flank with their naked cutlasses. The bonus of a musket to the king of the bay, and the promise of a tumbler full of powder for every man caught, had set the whole population on their track, and so successful was the hunt, that not only were that morning's deserters brought back, but five of those left behind on a former visit. The natives, however, were the mere hounds of the chase, raising the game in their coverts, but leaving the securing of it to the Frenchmen. Here, as elsewhere, the islanders have no idea of taking part in such a scuffle as ensues upon the capture of a party of desperate seamen. The runaways were at once brought aboard, and, though they looked rather sulky, soon came round, and treated the whole affair as a frolicsome adventure. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.